Vic Sage and the Projectionist, hosts of the Saturday Frights podcast, while working in the Retroist vault, find themselves under assault from a force of evil, an evil from the Projectionist's past. In an effort to save the vault, they're forced to carry out an emergency lockdown. With no possibility of escape, the two must enter a makeshift portal, linking them to the Projectionist's haunted drive-in. Being shoved through the portal by his co-host, Vic Sage vanished. He awoke to find himself transported to the haunted drive-in, but in the past of an alternate timeline. Due to a malfunction in the portal, the duo were merged into one being, with Sage being stuck in the Projectionist's younger body, and his co-host trapped deep within Sage's subconscious, acting as his voice of reason. The only link to their own timeline was a portable recording device, disguised as a small briefcase, acting as their only communication to the Retroist Vault and possibly their only way home.
And now, on with the show.
Projectionist, when are you going to tell me where we're headed?
Slow down here, Victor. Take the next right.
You aren't going to tell me, are you?
No. You are at the best of times. Shall we say skittish? I feel you will not care for our destination.
Thanks, man. Considering what I've seen and been subjected to since we teamed up, I would say I'm doing great.
Not to change the subject, but you handle this automobile rather well, Sage.
Well, thank you, Projectionist. I still can't believe Nancy actually let us borrow it for your little road trip. Don't get me wrong, but back in our time, how many people you work with would let you borrow their parents' car?
A more trusting time. Even in this timeline, eh?
I suppose so. The car handles really well. Smooth. Lots of room, too. Oh, hey, the briefcase recording light is on.
The Retro spies on us once again.
Hey, friends. We're taking a little road trip to, well, somewhere. The Projectionist was refusing to tell me where we are going, though. All I do know is I had to bring a shovel.
Just a small taste of what it's like to be stuck in your subconscious. Dear listeners, what Victor hasn't told you is I'm attempting to claim a necessary item in the construction of a new portal to get us home.
Since we obviously do not have a car in this era, a young woman we've become friends with at the Starlight Starbright Family Fun Drive-In, named Nancy Sully, agreed to let us borrow her parents' Chevrolet Corsair for this day trip.
Corvair, Victor. The name is right on the dashboard, for the love of Pete. Nancy, though, she is a good kid. She was in our time as well.
So, you worked with her at the drive-in of our time?
Yeah. For a short time.
Devil or angel, I can't make up my mind. Which one you are, I'd like to wake up and find.
Was that the drive-in trying to tell us something? Or actually a glitch in the radio?
I'm sure it was just a technical issue. Yes.
Well, since you won't tell me where we're going, will you at least tell me how long we've got until we reach our destination?
Certainly. We have a little ways to go.
You're going to be the death of me, Projectionist.
One can certainly hope.
You do know that I can hear everything you say now, right? Anyway, since the briefcase is recording, how about we pass the time by doing the podcast?
I wasn't aware we had viewed anything worthy of doing a radio broadcast, Victor.
Listeners, if you hadn't heard our last podcast, we asked for requests this go-around. We put all of the suggestions in an old Folgers coffee can, and the one we withdrew was the December 8th, 1985 episode of Amazing Stories, entitled Remote Control Man. This is an episode that I hadn't seen in a couple of years, but I think it's fair to say that the projectionist didn't care for it as much as I did.
That is putting it mildly. Remind me, and the listeners again, what is the name of our radio broadcast?
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting episode, friends. So, I take it you were upset because this was more fantastic in nature than frightening?
Absolutely.
But you were totally okay with the subject of our last show, Twilight Zone's The Changing of the Guard. There wasn't anything scary about that.
True. However, it wasn't a failed attempt at slapstick humor, Sage.
Okay. I think I already know the problem. You weren't watching TV much back in the 1980s, right?
Most certainly not. How could anything on the boob tube compare to what I showed every night at the Haunted Drive-In?
Well, there's a huge problem right there, my friend. This episode is one big tip of the hat to not just some of the most popular shows on NBC at the time, like The A-Team, but classics like Leave It to Beaver as well.
Then the writer of this episode, this hack, failed to anticipate the wants of his audience.
I guess I'm just a stubborn kind of fella, got my mind made up.
Now, you just be quiet. You are meant to be on my side.
I figured with the moral of the story that you of all people would appreciate this episode a little more. For what it's worth, Projectionist, Amazing Stories episodes were generally meant to focus more on the fantastic or even sci-fi tales, although there were certainly episodes that had a horror slant, like when we discussed the episode Mirror Mirror on the podcast. Back in my youth, when we heard Steven Spielberg was bringing us an anthology series in the spirit of Twilight Zone, it was incredibly exciting news. Anyway, Remote Control Man was directed by A Christmas Story's Bob Clark, from a story by Steven Spielberg. You know, the guy you called a hack, Projectionist. The teleplay was written by Douglas Lloyd McIntosh. It concerns a beaten-down-by-life middle-aged man by the name of Walter Poindexter, played by Sidney Lessig. The universe truly seems to have it out for Walter. For example, he's enjoying some classical music in the privacy of his own car. When he reaches a streetlight, he finds himself being yelled at by an elderly woman in the next car over. Even when he gets home, he can find no peace.
Especially when he returns home, dear listeners. Walter Poindexter must use the top of a trash can lid to shield himself from a pack of angry, possibly rabid dogs.
I don't think they're rabid in the least, but Walter does find his slacks getting ravaged and his ankles bit by a collection of small neighborhood dogs. We quickly find out that poor Walter's home life is even worse, as his wife, Grendel...
I thought I had misheard her name while we were watching this, Sage. It is Grendel.
I think Spielberg is letting you know how bad Walter's wife is right off the bat. I mean, why else name the character after one of the monsters Beowulf must overcome in the Anglo-Saxon poem, right? Grendel is played by Motel Hell's Nancy Parsons.
She's a chain-smoking harpy whose sole existence in this story is to belittle and ignore the pleas of Walter Poindexter. Nancy Parsons, while magnificent in Motel Hell, is all but chewing the very scenery in her over-the-top performance.
I will agree that she's playing it large, but remember, this is a comedic episode. She is supposed to be over the top. It also aids in getting we the viewers on Walter's side so much the quicker.
I found it rather off-putting myself. Take the next right after the crossroads.
Well, I thought it was funny. Walter finds himself berated for not remembering to bring ice cream home to Grendel. She doesn't want to hear excuses, though, and immediately sets him to the task of retrieving a spoon stuck in the trash disposal.
Yes, since this is a comedy, Walter Poindexter manages to get his beefy hand stuck in that very disposal.
which is when we viewers learn that poor Walter's life is actually worse than we first thought, because we then meet his son, Ralph, a pint-sized terror that just happens to be played by the Goonies' Jeff Cohen. You know, the actor who portrayed Chunk in that movie.
Ralph Poindexter is without a doubt the spawn of the Dark Lord. The infernal little wretch, sensing his father's hand is stuck in the disposal, is quick to rush across the kitchen to switch it on.
Ralph is a terror. I mean, he was trying to seriously hurt Walter. Luckily, our main protagonist is able to yank his hand and the spoon out before anything truly horrible happens. But before you know it, Grindel is raining blows down upon Walter for raising his voice to Ralph, for calling him out on what he was about to do. While Jeff's character of Chunk in The Goonies was lovable, his role in Remote Control Man is anything but, as he plays to his mother's sympathy while all the while making faces at Walter.
There is, however, dear listeners, a second son, a member of the Hare Krishna movement, it appears. Although this young man has not learned from that, as he becomes a shrieking man-child soon after we meet him.
It's meant to be funny, projectionist. When his son finds out that Walter has not just failed to stop by the store after work and buy ice cream, but his cheese whiz, he blows his top and storms off. Then, we viewers learn there is literally one thing. A small silver lining in Walter's chaotic life.
The boob tube. Hands on the wheel, Sage.
It's okay. I've got this.
Oh, that's right. Go to your precious TV. Run to Never Never Land and shut us out. As usual, you don't relate, Walter. For all you know, there might be a Mozart here. Or there could be a Shakespeare. Or a Churchill, or an Abraham Lincoln. You don't know who might be in here, Walter.
I know who's in there. There's an Attila the Hun in there. That's who's in there.
What did you say?
I said, that's right, Hun.
I just about had it, Walter. TV, 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 night and day. One of these days, you're gonna get a big surprise.
That's right. Walter's only comfort is watching TV. Although, with a family like he has, can we actually blame him? Projectionist, I think we should also add that Sidney Lassick really nails it as Walter. What I mean is, you can't help but feel sorry for him.
If you say so, I think we are getting a rather one-sided view of things.
And I think you're getting ahead of the synopsis, but you are totally onto something there, my friend. Things aren't any better at work for Walter, as we see a prime example of the term passing the buck. Our protagonist is surrounded by stacks of paperwork from his superiors, threatened that if he doesn't finish those mounds of work before the end of the day, he'll lose his job. Then he comes home, and shockingly, Grindel is in a great mood.
Yes, the put-upon woman has gone out shopping and secured herself a new wardrobe and hairdo.
While Walter is glad, relieved might be the better word, that his wife is happy, he can't help but wonder where she came up with the money to purchase the new outfit. You probably have already guessed it, friends, but she sold Walter's TV. As you might imagine, he's shocked, heartbroken.
Overcome with anguish, Walter Poindexter even manages to raise his voice to Grindel. For all the good it does.
Walter barges out of the house and goes for a drive. But much like in a Twilight Zone episode, the universe directs our protagonist to a place off the beaten path.
In what might be the best moment of this episode, Walter Poindexter finds himself driving into the fog-covered parking lot of a TV shop called Metaluna.
Which, if you don't know, friends, is a tip of the hat to the classic 1955 science fiction film, This Island Earth. The store is named after the Meta Luna mutants in that movie. It's an odd place, to say the least. Walter is stunned when he enters to see that the fog isn't just on the outside, but inside as well. something that the salesman laughs away as being just a gimmick to get people to enter the store.
Walter appears to be so confused that he fails to realize that the attendant called him by his last name as he enters the shop.
The sales clerk is played by Charlie Dell, who you listeners might recognize from his 71 episodes of Evening Shade as Nub Oliver. Before Walter knows what has happened, he has himself a brand new and space-age looking TV set. The clerk all but insists he take it home immediately, and when the man mentions he probably couldn't afford it, the salesman quickly counters that his credit is in good standing at the store. Walter has barely had time to set it up in the living room back home, in the same spot the old TV sat, when Grendel appears, and she's less than pleased.
That is something of an understatement. His wife not only accuses him of keeping a secret bank account, but when he ignores her, she leaves the room to come back with an axe. Take the next left, Sage.
Grendel is set to destroy the new TV, and Walter, all but on his knees begging her to stop, just happens to press a button on the oversized remote control in his hands. Zap! Grendel disappears. This, of course, freaks Walter out, and when he presses the button again, his wife appears once more, ready to smash the TV set to bits with that axe. He then points at the TV. He's watching a beauty pageant, by the way. Presses the button again, and now, in Grendel's place, is the beauty contestant that was just featured on the television.
This is no mere trick of Walter Poindexter's mind. The contestant is flesh and blood, and it is as if she were plucked from that live broadcast.
Oh, she was totally taken from the pageant and brought to Walter's living room. You can see the MC on the TV set in the background, looking around to find where she disappeared to. This young lady also seems to have eyes only for Walter, which makes him quite happy, as you can imagine. Not so much his eldest son, who walks in on him giving the contestant a quick smooch. The young man obviously takes great pleasure in catching his father in such an act and bellows for Grendel. But Walter has got the hang of the remote now and isn't ready to face the music for his actions.
PA's out buying earrings, the Colonel's out buying cigars, and Murdoch's out of his mind. So what about me? I mean, what do I get to be out of? You know, we're supposed to be a team, an equal team. So if they're out of something, then I'm out of something.
Blast it all, Victor. Both hands on the wheel.
Okay. I hope you'll forgive that pun just a second ago. Walter managed to turn his eldest boy into the face man from the A-Team, played by Dirk Benedict, as you heard. Little Ralph is not too far behind, but Walter has had enough, and like that, the angry child has become Arnold Jackson from Different Strokes, of course played by the late Gary Coleman. Things are looking up for Walter, I guess. The next morning, we find him awaking in bed next to the beauty contestant. He becomes disappointed, however, when she won't make him breakfast. So, out comes the remote control, and zap, she's replaced by a TV character that knows a bit about taking care of her family.
Hands on the wheel, Victor! Hands on the wheel!
You know, there's nothing you can do to stop me, is there?
Not until you go to sleep, Victor.
I'll call your bluff. After all, it's your body, projectionist, that we're stuck in.
Oh my goodness, I've overslept. I've never overslept in my whole life before, Ward. Oh, I hope you won't fire me.
Oh no, June.
Breakfast will be ready in 10 minutes. Wally, Beaver, time to get up. It's school day.
That's right, friends. Walter has replaced the contestant with none other than June Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver, played by Barbara Billingsley, naturally.
Here is where things begin to truly break down in the episode, listeners. June calls the Face Man.
The Face Man's real name in the A-Team series is Templeton Peck, projectionist.
As if I care. The Face Man and Arnold Jackson seem to realize they are characters. Yet June Cleaver addresses them as Wally and Beaver. She calls Walter Poindexter Ward.
Yeah. Her two children in that show, Leave It to Beaver, are Wally and the Beave. Her husband is named Ward.
Fine. But why doesn't she realize she's a character like the Face Man and Arnold Jackson?
Well, I would say because it's funnier that way, Projectionist. Walter seems overcome with joy at his new family made up of TV characters, even breaking down a little at the table before he heads off to work. Sadly, things at his job haven't improved.
He does appear, though, to be in a better mood. What I wondered is why didn't he bring the remote control with him so he could alter those around at his workplace?
I think for the remote control to work, it has to be in conjunction with the TV set. Walter gets a disturbing call from June, though. It seems like Wally, well, she means Templeton Peck, has gotten them in a bit of trouble. They are tied up at home and being threatened by two thugs, one of who is played by House of 1000 Corpses, Sid Haig. They're about to burn the house down when Walter is able to get home and try to stop things from escalating even further.
That doesn't go over so well, eh?
Well, Walter does manage to turn Sid Haig into Richard Simmons. The other thug pulls out a gun and is about to shoot Simmons when Walter quickly uses the remote control to transform that man into Lyle Alzado. It doesn't go according to plan, though, as Lyle then charges and tackles Walter to the floor, knocking the remote control out of his hand, damaging it as the TV starts to rapidly flip through channels, which makes things go from bad to worse, as what the TV beams in is the Incredible Hulk, which I admit I assumed was just played by Lou Ferrigno, but was in fact, for this episode, played by The Money Pit's Jake Steinfeld. The TV doesn't stop there. It continues to transport all manner of celebrities into Walter's living room, like the dating game's Jim Lang, Dynasty's Leanne Hunley, The Stuff's Clara Peller, Days of Our Lives, Christian Alfonso, Kit from Knight Rider comes crashing into the house, contestants from Let's Make a Deal, and then LaWanda Page appears to steal the scene as Sanford and Sons on Esther, complete with her handy purse, which she uses to start hitting Walter over the head repeatedly. Then, a very familiar TV personality appears to offer Walter some sage advice.
Here's Walter!
Dad! Oh, please! Help me, Mr. Brad! What'll I do?
What are you asking me for? I'm just a character on television. I'm not real.
Go ahead, try. Go ahead, don't be afraid.
Give me the box now! See? Shadows, light and shadows, not real. That's the whole trouble with this, Walter. None of this is real.
That's right, Walter. Don't be such a wimp watching the boob tube all the time.
Yeah, tune us off. Tune into people like your wife and kids.
Yeah, turn it off!
Yeah, turn it off! Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Turn it off!
As the assembled and not-so-friendly mob of TV characters chant, "Turn it off," over and over, Walter cries out, covering his ears, before snatching up the TV remote, and does just that. He turns off the television, and suddenly, the mob vanishes, and there is peace and quiet once more.
Until we can hear Gretel Poindexter crying out for her husband to come to bed, as she is lonely.
True. Walter, it appears, has learned from his strange encounter, and I get the feeling that he's going to make sure that his wife and kids are now his main priority. Perhaps his newly found devotion will help ease things between them.
But Sage, we have seen for ourselves in this episode that Grindel Poindexter is mean and bullies her husband unfairly.
But like you brought up earlier, Projectionist, I think we are meant to understand that this is all how Walter perceives his life. If you listen closely to Grindel when she's mad, she's constantly bringing up just how much TV he actually watches. At least that is how I felt after we watched Remote Control Man. As Walter places the remote control on the TV and heads to bed, we see the TV slowly disappear from sight. Having successfully helped Walter's life, I assume it's returning to the Metaluna store, waiting for the next customer that might need it. And friends, that is the complete synopsis for Amazing Stories, Remote Control Man. Projectionist, I assume since we were on the road, you didn't bring any drive-in ads for the listeners?
That is unfortunately the case. I apologize, dear listeners.
Well, I came prepared. Actually, when we pulled this episode out of that Folgers can, another slip of paper fell out too. So I figured we would talk about that movie on the next show.
Someone's having a party for the top 10, the senior class snobs. Before they get to celebrate, six of them will die in the most bizarre ways you'll ever see.
Virginia, don't go away. Come over here, Virginia.
It is up to you to determine whether you wish to subject yourself to fear, terror, and shock. Because of the bizarre nature of this birthday party, pray you are not invited.
Director Bob Clark passed away in 2007 with 29 directing credits, including 1972's cult classic Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, 1974's Dead of Night and Black Christmas, 1981's Porky's and its 1983 sequel, as well as 1985's Turk 182.
Oh my! Bob Clark did have a horror pedigree.
He sure did.
I wonder when he lost it then and lowered himself to direct this television show.
Oh, for goodness sake. Sidney Lassick died in 2003, but was known for his roles in 1975's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, 1976's Carrie, and 1980's Alligator, which I can't wait until we cover on this show. Nancy Parson passed away in 2001, but made appearances in 1980's Where the Buffalo Roam. She was in 1981's Porky's, 1983's Sudden Impact with Clint Eastwood, as well as 1989's Steel Magnolias. And I think that about wraps up this episode. On behalf of the projectionist and myself, we thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. Our ending theme is entitled Twisted Toys and was composed by Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Of course, I have to give thanks for the invaluable feedback to my co-host, the projectionist. Where can your fans find you if they wish to contact you?
I don't care for current technological standards, although I am sometimes on the Facebooks. Projectionist, Haunted Drive-In.
If you're new to our show, you may not know we have a Saturday Frights Facebook page as well. And we would greatly appreciate it if you could stop by and give us a like, or even let others know about it. It's another spot where we can share our love of retro horror with you and not have to wait until Saturday to do so. The podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you could click subscribe and leave us a nice rating if you're pleased with our work, we would really appreciate that. And thank you to those that have already done so. I can be found nearly every day on The Retroist. If you have any suggestions for future shows or even feedback, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. We owe a great debt of gratitude to the Retroist himself. When you have retro needs, and we all do, just head over to www.retroist.com. Until next time, friends, remember to replace your car's speaker on its post before leaving the drive-in.
Pull in here, Sage. We've arrived.
What's with all the construction equipment, projectionist? Wait, that sign over there, next to the backhoe. Future home of the Smiths Grove Sanitarium? Did you bring us to a place that is a home to a future insane asylum?
Yes. Now, hurry up and grab that shovel. We need to get what I'm after before the construction workers return from lunch. Hurry!
Oh, boy. This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.